This is Attack of the 20th Century. Thank you for joining us as we explore science fiction, fantasy, and horror films of the 20th century. I'm your host, Jeff.
And I'm Kim.
Welcome to Episode 11, where we review Roger Corman's Battle Beyond the Stars, released September 8th, 1980. Look for us on Instagram and Facebook at Attack of the 20th Century, that's 20th. We post our next movie selections there. You can comment, give your thoughts, and they just might make it on the air. All right, well, what are some things that we have been watching this week?
Well, a favorite for me, something that I'm very happy about, is that our youngest has discovered The Muppet Show Tonight on Disney Plus. Mm-hmm. And I am, if you know me a little, you know that I'm an old school throwback, huge Muppets fan.
Yeah.
I was probably the only high schooler in the 90s that was still a huge Muppets fan back in the day. I just love the Muppets. They're hilarious. They speak to my sense of humor and, I don't know, weirdness or whatever. But so anyhow, our youngest, our 9-year-old, has found The Muppet Show Tonight on Disney Plus, and that's like his go-to now. If he's got a few minutes, he wants to watch a show, that's his go-to, and I am not mad about it. I am here for it.
Yeah. We turned it on. I tried to coax him into watching it, and of course, he has his favorites that he latches on to.
Sure.
But you could just tell, like, after he watched the first one, it was definitely warming up to him, and then we watched another one, and then finally it was... hey, Dad, let's watch that first one again. And
yeah, he loves the very first episode of season one.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and he's shown it. Now he's made your mom watch it. I think he's made his cousin, our nephew, watch it. Like, I love it when a kid gets so excited about something he wants everybody else to watch it. Well, I say I love that. I love it when it's something I also enjoy.
That's right. That's right.
I don't love it when it's, you know, I don't know, something that...
Captain Underpants.
Yeah, exactly. It's like nails on a chalkboard. No, so I love it that it's something awesome and that I also love.
You know, hats off to Jim Henson.
Oh, man.
Not only is he super creative with, you know, the Muppets and there's the comedy, but he was also really musical. I mean, all of these numbers from every episode... There's something that's real catchy about him.
Oh, yeah.
And it's him singing, you know, in a voice that's not his natural voice.
Right. I can't sing in a voice that is my natural voice.
So, wow. I mean, just an absurd talent there.
Yeah. Yeah. So great. And what a time that a man with puppets and crazy voices took off and, like, really is an American niche, you know? Mm-hmm. There's a timer going off in our kitchen. Why is there a timer going off?
Yeah, we have some things in the oven.
Oh, do we need
the oven saying it's fully heated?
Oh, okay. It's preheating.
Preheating, yep.
Good deal. Good deal.
Well, I know that we've been telling you that we've been watching WandaVision, and we did finally wrap up that series. And no spoilers, of course, but overall, what did you think of WandaVision?
I thoroughly enjoyed WandaVision. Especially, what were there 9 episodes?
Mm-hmm.
We'll say the first 7 episodes. I really, really, especially, really the very beginning when you're just clueless. It was a little weird watching the first couple episodes and going, I don't get it. I don't understand what's happening here. But it was, I don't get it in a good way. Not like in this makes no sense to me. Why am I watching this? But more of a like, wait a minute. Something's not right.
Yeah.
And I don't know what it is.
And I'm intrigued.
And I'm here for more of that. So that first, even once we, what was it, by maybe episode 4, we started really getting more of what's happening in the present with the SWORD agency and all of that. Even then, there were still enough questions to keep you wanting that next episode. So, I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I really enjoyed it as well. There was enough throwback because, you know, you and I are kind of old souls anyway, and there are throwbacks to these old shows that we grew up on and have enjoyed over the years. And so I could tell, too, that the cast was having fun. I felt like the cast was enjoying this.
Yeah, it did seem that way, for sure.
And Paul Bettany and Elizabeth Olsen were really sinking their teeth into these roles. And then...
Yeah. Probably some of the best acting I've seen from Elizabeth Olsen, honestly, in those early episodes.
Yeah, she definitely gained some acting points, you know, some street cred for this whole series.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I'm with you. I really feel like the last couple episodes, they didn't stick the landing for me.
Right.
you know, without being too negative. Just they did all this building up, and the last episode in particular, I felt like they crammed in so much, and just it was hard to deliver on what they had built up to.
Right. This is not a comment on current Doctor Who episodes because we haven't kept up with the most recent seasons, but I do feel like they suffered from, I don't know, Doctor Who-itis.
Yeah.
We used to complain about this and in recent years of Doctor Who is like they you got this big story buildup for so many episodes and then they just cram it all in at the end. We got to tie up all the loose ends.
Yeah.
And it was just, it's just too much to accomplish.
Yeah, I felt like it was a little too ambitious. They're trying to pull in so many things from so many different places. But that's not to say that the show wasn't great. It really was a nice change up in the Marvel formula.
Oh, yeah. It's totally out of the box. And I enjoy that a lot.
And I think that's probably, again, without getting spoilerific, the last episode or two kind of returned to the Marvel formula. And I think that's why it was a little bit of a turnoff for me.
Yeah, because they were doing something so unique and so different. And then it was like, but this is how we do Marvel.
Yeah.
Here it is. Blah. Yeah, I'm interested. I mean, I think obviously you and I were very nostalgic. And so we enjoyed those early episodes because of the intrigue and just the difference, but also because of that throwback to those old shows that we like to watch. Mm-hmm. I know I've overheard several different, we'll say 10th graders in my little homeschool group discussed this series. And there were several of them that really liked it. And they got into, I don't think they cared about the nostalgicness. Is that a word? Of the throwback to the old TV shows, but they like the story and they like the mystery in the story. But then I heard a couple of the fellas in my class, they were not into it. They didn't like it. I don't know if it was the throwback to the old shows that was throwing them off or the fact that they couldn't figure out what was going on early on. But I know one in particular, I'm not sure that he's even going to finish the series because he did not enjoy it.
Yeah.
So I just don't know if that's an age difference or I don't know. Cause like I said, some of the girls in my class were definitely into it.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do wonder about the age demographic, like who's into it, who's not. It definitely feels geared towards, you know, our age bracket because we grew up watching these old shows, even though they were in rerun. We grew up on those. I mean, then obviously we were watching things like The Office and Malcolm in the Middle, things of that time frame.
Well, what's the plan moving forward? Is Disney going to make more of these? Is this a one-hit wonder kind of thing?
I think WandaVision is still up in the air.
Okay.
Again, no spoilers, but they definitely set up for the movie universe. I think the Doctor Strange movie.
Oh, right.
It's been announced, obviously, so we're not giving anything away. Yeah. But,
and Scarlet Witch shows up in that, right?
She's going to be in that one.
Right.
And so I think they did some things to set up that film.
Sure.
Which is cool, but as far as the series, I'm not sure. I know they have so many other Marvel series planned. They're probably just concentrating on making those a success.
Right.
So today we are reviewing Battle Beyond the Stars. Jimmy Murakami directed the live-action segments, and Roger Corman directed the special effects portions, utilizing the tremendous talents of a very young James Cameron.
That's right. So this is the part where I warn you, we will talk spoilers. So if you haven't seen this movie, hit pause, go watch it, come back and join us in a bit. So this movie is your classic space escapade. Basically, young man on a peaceful alien planet that's about to be taken over by space barbarians. So he has to recruit a misfit team consisting of a space cowboy and other various aliens to help him defend his home planet from invasion. It is rated PG. It only has a 45% on Rotten Tomatoes, 41% audience score. So if that tells you anything, it's a B movie.
It's a B movie, but that's okay. I think it's a good B movie. Well done, B movie.
I will say we've watched a lot of B movies, and I've prefaced this on a different podcast, but most of my B movie watching is through the lens of Mystery Science Theater. I don't watch a lot of B movies just to be watching them. So I won't say this is the first time I've watched a B movie without Crow and
Tom Servo.
Yeah, Tom Servo, you know, giving me their take and their one-liners throughout the movie. But it's not as bad Like, to be labeled a B-movie, and I know there are big B-movie fans out there that love B-movies, right? Yeah, so when I say bad, don't get your feelings stepped on. But that is what a B-movie is, right? It's a bad movie. Right. Low budget. So this didn't seem as low budget and as bad as others that we've seen.
Oh, yeah.
What's the one we went to see? I think it was around Halloween. You and I went to the local theater. We went to Pulp
Carnival
Theater.
Of Souls.
Oh, yeah, Carnival. That was very B-movie, right?
Yeah, it was.
Like, and we see Mystery Science Theater, or we saw Riff Trax do that.
Riff Trax did that.
But we actually went to the theater and saw the original.
The first time we saw it was in this 1920s historic theater.
Yes, in our hometown.
Theater in our hometown. And it plays like a very long episode of Twilight Zone.
Yes, but poorly done.
Yeah,
Twilight
not
Zone
done
always
as well
had
as,
great production value. This was bad. So I will say Battle Beyond the Stars, bringing it back to the movie we're actually talking about, did not seem as B-movie-ish as other B-movies that I've seen.
Yeah. Yeah. The first time I saw this was last year at some point during the quarantine, you know, when you're just poking around and trying to find something to watch, something to do. And I discovered this one and I really liked it. You know, obviously when you're watching it, there's that moment when you decide, am I going with it or am I just turning off this movie?
Right, right.
You know, like, where's the guys from Nestor and they have a hot dog and one starts biting into it and they all start chewing, making a silly face. It's like, you can make a decision to say, this is the dumbest movie ever. I'm shutting this off. Or you can just kind of laugh and say, all right, this is where we're going. I'm in.
Can we pause and enjoy the fact that the American, I'm using air quotes that you can't see, space cowboy brings hot dogs to the rest of the galactic world. That is our contribution to...
Yes. And scotch on ice.
Oh, yeah. Scotch on ice and hot dogs roasted over a fire. A fire created by thermokinetic beings.
So
go,
I caught America. I caught more this time than I did the first time, like them roasting the hot dogs over those two little guys, Kelvin.
Yeah.
I thought that was hilarious. I missed that the first time. For
all right.
Reason.
So the science nerds out there, that was fun. It was fun that there's these two little guys. They don't talk. They communicate through their body temperature. And their name is Kelvin. So there you go. My fellow science nerds. Their name is Kelvin and they heat up. That's how they communicate. And so they use them as the bonfire to roast hot dogs. Yeah.
So it's, you know, not to this level of ridiculousness, but let's say in Big Trouble in Little China, we talked about in our episode 2, you know, there's a kung fu movie, and then it gets to a point where the three storms show up. They come down from lightning, they're throwing swords, you know, people are shooting at them, it's going right through them. And you have to make a decision at that point, like, am I okay watching a non-standard kung fu movie? Am I okay going into this fantasy realm or not?
Sure.
Well, unfortunately for Big Trouble in Little China, most people were not on board with going into this fantasy world.
Right.
And it got bad press, and people did not show up for the theaters. Well, for Battle Beyond the Stars, this is a case where they have a much lower budget, actually budgeted at $2 million.
Right.
They did make $7.5 million return from the box office.
Okay. And there's a profit.
And then we saw, too, where he'd sold some rights to HBO to play it in syndication. And then overseas, he did a deal. So Roger Corman definitely made a good bit of money back on this film. You know, you just have to make a decision at some point. Like, am I going with this or am I dropping this?
Right.
And for us, we knew what we were getting into. So, you know, we're in it. We're in it. We're watching this.
Well, what were your initial thoughts on this?
Yeah, it wasn't as bad as I was expecting it to be, honestly. Now, I have beefs to pick with it, for sure. But overall, it was not nearly as bad as I was geared up for.
Well, that's good, I guess. So, it was produced by Roger Corman, and for those of you who aren't familiar with that name, he's kind of a legend for directing and producing low-budget films and exploitation movies. You know, his big break was the Edgar Allan Poe adaptations in the 50s and 60s with Vincent Price.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And we've seen numerous of those.
Yeah, I didn't realize the same guy.
And, I mean, he kind of jumped on anything that was hot at the moment. The women in prison films that were big in the 70s, it kind of launched Pam Grier's career.
Oh, yeah.
The Mad Max knockoff films. He jumped on the post-Star Wars craze with this movie, Battle Beyond the Stars, Galaxy of Terror, Forbidden World. Just a ton of movies. You know, he's contributed a lot to sci-fi in the last 20 years with classics such as Raptor, Dino Croc, Super Gator, Sharktopus.
Oh my gosh, these are getting better.
Piranaconda.
Oh my gosh. This guy has found his niche.
Yes. His wife, he's got his wife also doing films, producing films. He's kind of coached her along the way. So you and I watched one earlier this year.
What did we watch?
Chopping Mall.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
His wife produced that one.
Oh, okay.
Let's move on to high fives. The first high five I will give is to James Horner in his second film for the film score that he produced.
Okay, so this is the music guy.
The music guy. I mean, he went on to score Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, Commando, The Rocketeer, Aliens, Willow, and Titanic, and Avatar, obviously.
Wow.
The next league up, right?
And yeah.
He obviously got familiar with James Cameron during this time, and Cameron brought him along for his run. Obviously, Cameron did Aliens, Titanic, Avatar. Yeah. But his music, just standing on its own in this movie, stands the test of time. It sounds epic. It sounds big. It sounds, I would say, you know, just as good as an A-list film.
Sure, like, sure.
It did well enough that Corman went on to use this soundtrack for other films of his.
Right, right. Came up again several times.
Yeah, and it sounded real familiar to me. You and I did watch Mystery Science Theater, The Magic of the Lost Kingdom or something,
oh,
or The Wizards
yes.
of the Lost Kingdom.
Yeah, I think it was Wizards of the Lost Kingdom.
Yeah, the same soundtrack. They reused that same soundtrack for that film.
Wow, wow.
I say he, meaning the producer, not the not James Horner. James Horner went on to, like we said, bigger and better things.
Yeah, yeah. So how does that work, James? Is he making royalties off of when they use his?
Who knows? It depends whatever deal they signed.
Okay.
Hopefully Horner was getting checks cut for those and he didn't sign away the rights.
Because it was reused multiple times.
Yeah.
Which, okay, so that's one of my high fives is really just economic ingenuity. Mm-hmm. I think Corman, he gets points in my book for just being, I don't know if it's frugality necessarily, but I read and watched some commentaries where this guy was the king of reusing set pieces from other movies, tossed away things. He kind of sounded mm-hmm. like he kind of had a collection of junk,
yeah.
but he really made it work. And then of course, you know, he's reusing this music in other places too. So this mm-hmm. guy, this guy's a, I don't We could say he's a cheapskate, or we could say, man, this is good branding, right? Because he's reusing these themes and even the musical themes throughout uh-huh. his body of work. So I don't know. Economic ingenuity is what we'll call that.
Yeah.
Instead of being cheap or lazy.
Hey, he saves money that way. You know, that leads us to the next one, special effects.
James Cameron got his big break when he got promoted to art director / special effects supervisor for this film.
Right.
The matte paintings looked gorgeous. I mean, they looked like that classic sci-fi stuff that I love. And
right.
The spaceship fights and everything looked much better than a $2 million film.
Oh, yeah.
You know, 1980 also had the Star Trek One, the motion picture come out, which had like a $44 million budget.
Wow.
And the spaceship fights weren't that far under what Star Trek produced.
Well, we're already a couple years into the Star Wars franchise at this point, mm-hmm. right? And,
right.
And there's not a huge difference, even though the budget is vastly different.
Yeah.
There's not a huge difference in those space scenes, especially when you see the ships, you know, just traversing space and whatnot. I thought they looked pretty impressive.
Yeah. Yeah, it all looked good, and the costumes looked good.
Yeah, we saw a major studio film recently, Logan's Run,
but they have this big box robot, and you can see the cutouts for the mouth and the eyes, and you can see a person inside of this box. It looked ridiculous. and that was like a big budget film. And the lizard people, the aliens, everybody, they didn't look that ridiculous. They looked
right.
pretty legit for this time. So I would say, you know, it's on par with an A-list movie, A-talent, special effects budget. So, yeah, James Cameron definitely gets a high five from me on this.
I would say that's probably one of the reasons why it didn't feel very B-movie-ish to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
Because it really... Like the street cred was there as far as props and cinematography.
Yeah, your movie's in space. There's a lot of action in space. And there's with all sorts of aliens involved. So right. if they look fake, if they look cheap, if they yeah. look stupid, then your whole production kind of collapses.
Yeah, exactly. So. You're definitely putting yourself into the B movie category.
And to your point about economic ingenuity, again, Corman reused a lot of those space scenes and fight scenes for other movies mm-hmm. that he had, like Space Raiders and some of the others that I mentioned earlier. Ones that we haven't seen.
I mean, the guy knows how to turn a buck on, you know, a low budget and then make some money off of it, right? Like, mm-hmm. that's not dumb.
Yeah. All right. What's another high five you would give?
Oh, I was going to mention... Richard Thomas, I know him affectionately as John Boy because yeah. I grew up watching a lot of the Waltons. So he plays Shad, the young Akira farmer, who's really our Luke Skywalker of this film, basically, yeah. right? So I felt like he acted it well. He seemed right for the part.
Mm-hmm.
He had that kind of like, you know, I don't know, calm, cool, collected. But the kind of an unsung hero, like he kind of has to be a hero, you mm-hmm. know, like he was kind of going to live his unassuming farmer life on his planet until he's forced to rise to the occasion. And he did it yeah. well. I thought he did it well.
I agree.
Out of the box from his Walton's persona, obviously, he's mm-hmm. not John Boy in this movie.
We've seen a lot of, like we said, B movies where, you know, somebody's trying to communicate a feeling and they're just over the top.
Right, right.
And his performance was a little subdued. Like he's trying to help
he's very subdued, yeah.
his people, but he's not like preachy, not super animated. He's just kind of a normal dude, which yeah. works.
Yeah, it works. It does work. Well, and there's a lot of caricatures in the other characters that join him, which I'm sure we'll talk about.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's smartly played on mm-hmm. his part because if he were over the top and then you've got all these... you know, kind of wacky aliens that come in, or the American space cowboy, it would have just been too much,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So it was nice that he was kind of the calm thread in yeah. all of it.
Yeah. And that leads me to my second high five to George Peppard as the space cowboy. He's the only character we know from Earth. He is defined by his many one-liners. We know him best as Hannibal from the
That's
A-Team.
Right.
And his presence alone adds some level of respectability to the film. Again, you know, not many people could pull off the space cowboy without it being overly cheesy. He's kind of got that Hannibal personality, but just a little more alcohol in him,
right.
a little few more years of seasoning in him. But yeah, I feel like he adds, you know, something to this movie that, you know, if you were seeing an unknown actor up there, he would have to win you over
right.
in his portrayal. But because it's George Peppard, we're like... okay, yeah, I see what he's doing.
He is George Peppard.
And
yeah.
he's George Peppard, yeah.
Exactly. No, I appreciated him for sure. I also appreciated, I guess, love interest / heroine that played opposite of Richard Thomas. I think her name, I don't know, Darlan? I don't know if that's Flugel.
Yeah.
I'm probably butchering her name, but she plays Nanelia.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like the only daughter of this quacky, you know, space scientist that lives on another planet. And of course, Shad, Richard Thomas's character, has to go around space looking mm-hmm. for people to come help his planet. You know, they're a planet of farmers. They need help protecting themselves from the barbarians.
Mm-hmm.
And so he goes to Dr. Hephaestus, which I do love the throwback to mm-hmm. Was that Greek or Roman Hephaestus?
It seems Greek.
God of the Forge.
Uh-huh.
I think that's Greek. But anyhow, Dr. Hephaestus is kind of off his rocker a little bit, you know. He's a head living in a robot body, I think.
Yeah.
But somehow, some way, he has this biological, beautiful blonde daughter, of course, that lives on his planet, and everybody else on the planet is an android. Like they make
yeah.
this race of android beings. And so she decides like Shad is her true love. She's got to leave. Her father is not willing to send armies or mm-hmm. androids or anything to help the Akira people fight this barbarian. But the daughter realizes like, no, this is, I got to get off this. The father actually wants Shad to stay there. Like, forget
yeah.
about your planet's doomed. They're going to get wiped off, you
right.
know, wiped out of the galaxy. You stay here and procreate with my daughter. We need to make some real humans on this planet, right? Tired of all these androids. I need some grandbabies.
Yeah.
But they, you know, Shad's got a calling. He's got to save his people. And then Nanelia realizes like, well, that's a higher calling than just staying here and playing with our robots for
yeah.
the rest of my existence with my dad.
Yeah.
So So she runs off. But I felt like it was well played. It wasn't like there was enough build up in their relationship that it was sort of mostly plausible.
Yeah.
Throughout the movie. And she did a good job of acting her role, too.
Yeah.
So yeah, I appreciated her acting.
Shad does a good job of communicating why it's important that he go and do this mission.
So. Right.
And I think he's trying to he's motivated to leave.
Yes.
But in doing so, she sees this higher calling and sees right. the value in it and decides to follow him. And, she plays it as she's falling in love with him slowly.
Exactly.
Which is more believable.
Yeah. She's not just like smitten and has to go with him.
Right.
Like we talked about Jason and the Argonauts and his love interest. Like,
oh, yeah.
Boom, all of a sudden she's just madly in love with him and has to go where he goes. Like, no, right. this is like... She gets the cause and she realizes basically the dead end that she's living in on this planet with no one but her dad and these androids.
Mm-hmm.
So that happens first. And then through the course of things,
right.
a relationship builds there. So I liked the believability because we don't always see that in these movies.
We don't even in, high budget films. And I thought she did great as well as, just her acting. She portrays this kind of woman that's not wise to the world. She's been
raised, she's very intelligent.
But she's extremely intelligent.
Right.
You know, she's been basically maintaining her father, his existence.
Yeah, she's kind of had some serious technical skills.
And this whole planet of clones or androids, I guess.
Yeah.
And you had another high five.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The five alien clones is another race yeah. of alien that Shad goes to seek help from, and I think they're collectively called the Nestor,
mm-hmm.
Which is funny because now if you're an IG mom, mm-hmm. everybody knows the Nestor as this famous lady out there that, you know, does home decor. But anyhow, that's a side note for the moms that may actually listen to this. So these are the Nestor, and they're five guys in like solid white costumes, and they share, only one of them is the spokesperson, but they mm-hmm. kind of share collective mind, the hive yeah. mind kind of thing, right?
Yeah. Mind, thoughts, and
yeah,
feelings.
Group consciousness, I guess mm-hmm. is what we'll call that. Yeah. And so they're interesting. And I thought they acted it well. It wasn't mm-hmm. silly, you
yeah.
know, like they did a good job. Like they had humor, there was comedy yeah. involved with them, but it wasn't over the top silly. So I really liked them.
Yeah.
And it was cool that they did they pulled one over on the bad guy. What's the bad guy's name?
Sador.
Yeah. He has to keep himself alive. Like, I don't know how old Sador is, him and his, you know, he's got like bird poop on his face. but he has to keep himself alive by the people he overtakes. He scavenges body parts off of them. And he has some wacky doctor that works for him that keeps replacing his body parts to keep him alive. So they capture one of the Nestor personalities and they're mm-hmm. going to chop his arm off and give it to Sador.
Uh-huh.
Well,
which they do.
They do. He gets this hand, which is kind of funny because their hands are like, they only have three fingers. I'm making the motion like other people can see my hand. I don't know. It looks like the Mork and Mindy thing or something. Like
yeah.
they're going to say Nanu Nanu or something. But anyhow, so they have this big white Mickey Mouse looking gloved hand. They attach it to Sador's body. Well, then the rest of the collective consciousness uses their mind and then try and strangle him.
No, he grabs a blade.
Oh, that's right. Grabs a blade. They're going to make him slit his own throat. And I'm like, oh, sweet. This is how we defeat the bad guy, the hive mind. Over here, right, is gonna take him out, but you know, unfortunately, Sador's doctor was there to dismember him quickly enough before he slit his own throat. So,
no, that was a great scene.
That was a good scene, though.
The scene where they met John Boy Shad, Shad's acting big and bad by pointing a gun at him, basically threatening him, and suddenly his hand turns towards him. He points the gun at himself through their collective
That's
mind.
Right. They like have mind powers over other people.
Yeah.
I guess even with that, I didn't think about that. Even if you don't have their appendage attached to your body, they can still
yeah.
basically use your own mind against you.
Yeah.
Yeah. yeah. So they're pretty cool.
Yeah, they were cool. Okay. Yeah. There were a lot of good things. I think we'll talk about more of the cast here in a bit because there was definitely, I think this movie benefited from having just good character actors
yes.
in the right spot, to make this film work.
Sure. There were some character actors that I didn't enjoy though.
Yeah. Well, go ahead and start. We'll start with our low point.
All right. So my first low point, I think her character's name is Saint X-Men.
Yeah.
She's technically a Valkyrie. It's played by, her part is played by Sybil Danning. She's a Valkyrie warrior and she's looking to prove herself in battle, which of course is what we know the Valkyrie to be about. Mm-hmm. But she's like the playboy pinup, not even, I don't know. Like she definitely plays it from like a even more character or caricatured version of a femme fatale. Like she wears very like Vegas style buxomy costumes. Yeah. I'm just making up words left and right today, I think, but whatever, we'll roll with it.
You've never even been to Vegas.
I've seen the pictures. All right. But yeah, most of her costumes have most of her chest hanging out, and even her lines are just bad writing. Like her lines are cheesy and she says them like she's in a, oh man, like not even a B movie, you know, like she's very flat. She overacts, her lines are bad and she's just very flat. Like everything is just, I must prove myself in battle. And then also I'm the sexy one here. So let me talk about that every other line. Yeah. So I don't know. It was just too much. It was silly. Yeah. That was silly.
Yeah. Yeah, she had one real reason for being in the movie, and that was sex appeal.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, look good on the cover of the movie poster.
Right.
But yeah, I agree. The acting was over the top. Really just, you know, you could tell she was acting. So yeah, I'll give a low point too. And this is really maybe not his fault, but the character Gelt, you know, played by Robert Vaughn. And I know he was one of the people handsomely paid from that $2 million budget to be in this film, because he's reprising basically the same role that he had in the original Magnificent Seven.
Okay.
You know, the character development is sadly lacking for Gelt, and he's kind of one note the whole film.
Yeah, he was very flat for me too.
Yeah, just, and we get it, you know, you can tell he's a good actor and there's more behind what he's doing. And if they had done a better story arc, maybe you would feel something when he's lying there dead at the end of the film.
Yeah.
But I kind of felt nothing. I kind of felt like, well, you were kind of bumping a log the whole film anyway.
Exactly, exactly. There goes that timer in the kitchen again.
Yeah.
Is there a child tending to it?
Yes.
Oh, good, good. Yes,
good. But yeah, that bothered me a little bit, because I know he's a good actor. You know,
right.
I could tell that one note he's doing is done effectively.
Yeah, but he's very much one note.
The
whole film.
And so, yeah. So a low point for me is just his character development.
Yeah, for sure. So can we talk about the spaceship? Like the main guy, Shad's spaceship.
Yes, no.
Yeah, so that's an odd name, first of all, for a spaceship. I just wanted to go, Tay and DeWitt. Sorry. But I will say her personality, because I guess she's like Knight Rider's Kit, you know, like she talks back and she has a fun personality. So I'm not knocking the personality of the spaceship. Mm-hmm. She's kind of a, I don't know, she could work at Mel's Diner or something. Kind of crotchety.
Sassy,
curses a little, you know, like she's fun, but it's the look of the spaceship that I have a problem with.
Yeah. It's definitely
very organic looking. And if you've seen the movie or even just seen posters, or Google it right now, Google Nell the spaceship, you'll know what I'm talking about. I don't want to get into specifics here, but and I think there's been criticism that it looks like boobs, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think it looks like boobs. It looks like other anatomy to me. Actually, it looks like a combination of anatomical parts. And I don't know why. It doesn't look spacey. It looks organic-y.
Yeah.
I don't like it. I don't like it.
No, it looks like it should be covered by underwear.
Yes, it does.
No matter what part you think it looks like, it should be covered by underwear.
It should have clothes on it. I don't care for it at all.
It is a little distracting.
The other spaceships look legit and pretty cool, pretty plausible.
Yeah.
But not that one.
Yeah.
That one's gross to me. I'm not into it.
No, I know, I could definitely understand that. All right, now we'll just go through some of the cast members that we noted. Obviously, John Saxon. He's sort of a legend in kind of the cult film genre, and he plays Sador, our main baddie, and I did enjoy him. I thought he did a good job. I was thinking of like the movie Star Crash, where you have your main baddie who's just over the top.
Right.
You know, he has this big villainous laugh. And, you know, again, this is a B movie, but you're getting acting that isn't really B acting.
No. Yeah. He's understated almost, but that kind of makes him a little more sinister.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say the only thing I wanted more from him was just a little more carnage to really kind of build him up to be like the baddest guy in the galaxy. And we really only see him, I guess we only see him take out one planet, which sounds, you know.
Yeah, but there's no carnage. Like, I mean, other than you just see a planet blow up.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You don't see the people on the planet blowing up, which I guess I'm thankful for. But
yeah.
But there's not a lot to prove to us why everyone's so afraid of him.
Yeah. If you had more money, maybe you could build up some things where he goes out and really shows how nasty and evil he is.
Right.
But his acting is good. And also Dr. Hephaestus, we've seen him in a lot of old movies. Sam Jaffe, his name is.
Yeah.
You know, I want to say he was in Ben-Hur, too. I'm going to have to look that one up. But yeah. So Sam Jaffe was in Ben-Hur. So he's, for those of you who've seen the old Ben-Hur, 1959.
Right.
He is Charlton Heston's love interest dad.
Oh, and okay.
He's basically a slave to Charlton Heston's character,
yes.
Ben-Hur. He's a victim of the bad guy in Ben-Hur.
Yeah.
I think he's blind. But anyway, he looked very familiar to me. I mean, he's an Academy Award winner.
Wow.
So, you know, it's just not your average actor. You could tell, like, he's probably better than this film, but...
right.
It works.
It works. We only see him for just a tiny portion of this film, really.
Yeah. And somebody else I'll mention is Jeff Corey, the guy that plays Zed.
Mm-hmm.
It's alluded to that he had several adventures with Nell and that he was...
Nell the spaceship.
But yeah, he's another one. I recognized him from Star Trek. The original Star Trek, he played in an episode there. But I thought it was interesting... about him, his career was the victim of being blacklisted. He attended some Communist Party meetings.
Oh,
he never joined the Communist Party, but you know, he attended some meetings and basically was blacklisted by Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
And we watched a movie about that with Woody Allen.
Yeah, the Woody Allen movie.
What's The Front.
The Front.
That's a good one, by the way. There's a really good film.
Yeah.
It's basically going through these types of actors and... playwrights and movie writers and directors, anybody that's in the industry who are communist sympathizers or they attended
suspected.
Some meetings.
Maybe they weren't even, but suspected as being.
Yeah. And you had to play ball or else you were blacklisted.
Yeah. Which I find that very relevant to the, here's my air quotes again, cancel culture of 2020, 2021.
Yeah.
It seems very similar.
Yeah. True.
And interesting.
True. So he was asked to lead, they were called the House Un-American Activities Committee, but they wanted names of people that were at that meeting.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you don't give the names, you're blacklisted. So
basically his career if you are one of the names, you're blacklisted.
Yeah.
Danged if you do, danged if you don't, right?
Yeah. So his career was toast for several years. But yeah, he makes an appearance here. He has an unfortunate demise, kind of a blind guy wandering around in the middle of the battle. Probably isn't your best idea.
Yeah. You should have like a safe space you can hunker down in.
Yeah. They did let him take out one guy with his rod or whatever, his walking stick.
Oh,
or whatever.
Yeah. I forgot about that. That's very true.
Oh, but yeah. So now we'll get into final summations. What say ye? Yay or nay?
I mean, I don't have like a hard, strong nay. I never want to see this again, but I'll be fine if I never see this again. So I think if that's my attitude going in, then it should be a nay for me. It's not a nay for like horrible reasons. It's just, meh, I've seen it once. I'm good. It's not one that, you know, like Jason and the Argonauts on a rainy Saturday afternoon, I'll be like, hey, let's throw this in and watch it because it's a good time.
Yeah. Know?
It's just okay.
Yeah.
So it's a soft nay from me.
Yeah. If you put on the hat of, I want to watch just some fun sci-fi, just kind of this action adventure romp in space, I would say yay. But, you know, it's not a cinematic classic. You know, you have to know what you're getting into. You're getting into a B film.
Right.
That is one of the best B films that I've seen.
Yeah. Yeah. I will say, as far as B films go, it probably sits at the top of the pile, not the bottom of the heap. Right.
Right. Now, yeah. How does it stack up against Empire Strikes Back? You know, those other, like,
right.
Obviously it's not going to do as well, but, you know, if you're a fan of James Cameron, or you're a fan of just filmmaking and special effects, if that right. kind of stuff interests you, I think this is a good movie to watch to see people do really great things with a small amount of money.
That's true. Well, and I will say for... just for the historical, the movie itself is not historical in any way, but when you look at the people involved, I mean, everything happens for a reason, right? This is mm-hmm. clearly a stepping stone for a lot of people, like James Cameron and mm-hmm. the music guy, Roger Corman was the producer.
James Horner. Yeah.
James Horner. Thank you. Horner and Corman are too closely related in my mind. Like they both went on to really do some amazing stuff. And little tidbit, I also saw that a young Bill Paxton worked on the sets as a carpenter and a painter.
That's right. Because
he was in between jobs.
That's right.
You know, so like even Bill Paxton, you know, this just provided work for him and he went on to do other better known things. So, mm-hmm. you know, it's still a soft nay for me just because I've seen it and I'm good with it. But, you know, it holds its place in the career of a lot of people for sure.
Yeah. So there you have it. We will move on to our mail call. So we did get a couple comments about this one. Adrian the Wiz said, I saw this recently. It's fun! Exclamation mark. So yeah, that's good. And Trey9F gave it a thumbs up and a big happy face.
Apparently he enjoys it.
He awesome. Enjoyed it. Yeah, that's positive, I would say. Marv Smooth says, classic! Exclamation mark.
All right. So there's some folks out there that really enjoy this.
Yeah.
Awesome.
And again, I mean, it's free. It's on Amazon Prime, Tubi TV.
Right.
I think it's...
it's something to watch.
Something to watch. It's fun. But yeah, make sure you hit us up on Instagram or Facebook and give some suggestions. You know, we throw out different ideas for movies and surveys and stuff. So go ahead and respond to those when you see them. And it will help us guide this show forward, right?
Sure. Yeah. Give us some thoughts and opinions. And we'll give you our thoughts and opinions.
Yeah, that's right. So what are we doing next week?
That is a great question. What are we doing next week? Okay, so actually what we're going to watch this week is The Gorgon from 1964. Depending on where you look, it's not rated or it's considered TV-14. This is a classic Hammer horror, but a lesser known Hammer horror movie. And it's got the great duo of Christopher Lee and Peter Cushing.
Yeah.
So we're going to learn about an early 1900s small European village that's being tortured by a Gorgon who's taken human form and terrorizing their village.
Ooh.
So, yeah, I've never heard of this one, never seen this one. Obviously, I know what a Gorgon is, so I'm mm-hmm. assuming we're dealing with some sort of Medusa-like
yes.
figure.
Yes.
So I'm excited to see this one. This sounds like a fun watch.
Yeah, it should be fun. I think we'll enjoy this one. We'll see.
Yeah, if you want to watch it along with us, it's available for free on Tubi TV. You can go to their website, Tubi, TUBITV.com.
Mm-hmm.
They also have an app you can watch from. So, yeah, go watch it and see if you like it.
Yes. Yeah, we downloaded Tubi TV for our television. So you can watch it on TV. You can watch it on any smart device or just go to the website. All right, cool. Well, I think that does it.
Yep, that's it from me.
Yeah. Well, have a great week.
Enjoy your movies, guys.
Yes, enjoy. Peace out.
Peace out.